Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that does its best to tamp down any internal conflicts that we might have. We simply get Nathan to admit that he's wrong, and then we proceed. Just kidding. Nathan never admits that he's wrong. Anyway, conflict is on the docket this week as we tackle Alex Garland's new film titled Civil War, which is a look at a possible future for a U.S. torn into warring factions and a quartet of journalists who are determined to cover the conflict. In the second half of the show, we'll discuss the film La Chimera, which stars British actor Josh O'Connor as a grieving expatriate tomb raider living on the edge in Italy. First, though, let's step into a world that feels ripped from our daily headlines. Well, not actually. Even given all the political polarization that we read about on a daily basis, the country hasn't devolved into actual secessionist violence. Not yet, anyway. In Alex Garland's movie, though, we're transported directly into a conflict between the federal government, headed by a beleaguered president, played by Nick Offerman, and a California-Texas alliance called the Western Forces, plus other random groups. Can you say Florida? Anyway, Garland focuses on a quartet of journalists who are trying to score an interview with the president while they still can. Seems the Western forces, despite the president's continually rosy pronouncements, are closing in. Thus, we're taken on a road trip with the journalists. Photographer Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst, reporter Joel, played by the Brazilian actor Wagner Moura, the youthful freelance photographer Jesse, played by Priscilla actress Kaylee Spaney, and veteran New York Times reporter Sammy, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson. The four endure a number of close calls and at least two fatal encounters en route. It's hard to fault the skills of Garland, known for having directed such films as Ex Machina, Men, and Annihilation, because Civil War feels more authentic in how it captures the intensity of graphic violence than even the recent Oscar-winning documentary feature 20 Days in Mariupol. Still, that's about all Civil War does. Any message Garland might be trying to impart, assuming he's trying to impart anything at all, gets lost in all the noise.
Yeah, I'm still chewing on this one. Not so much because I'm unsure of what Alex Garland is saying, but because I'm unsure if he ends up saying anything at all. And it's not surprising that a movie called Civil War would prove to be divisive. It may prove divisive in this room today. I don't know. But it seems like the biggest bone of contention for people is that Garland sort of deliberately muddies the ideological waters. We know, as you said, that California and Texas have seceded. We know that there's an authoritarian government in the White House. We know that violence has overtaken huge swaths of the country, although there are other parts of the country that just kind of have their fingers in their ears and pretending like nothing's going on. And we know that various forces are turning D.C. into a war zone in an attempted coup. So this is an inherently politically fraught premise. And yet he's evading a lot of political specifics. And I think the vagueness there is the point. And it's that idea that in times of war, the quote unquote good guys and the quote unquote bad guys become indistinguishable from one another. And, you know, there is a certain horror in seeing Americans burn down their own country for reasons beyond our comprehension, beyond their comprehension at some point.
But let's be clear here. What kind of Americans are you talking about?
Well, yes, and, you know, that's a line that's in the trailer and in a particularly chilling scene in this movie, Civil War. So I also don't know, though, that if Alex Garland were to have outlined the specifics of which party was responsible for which part of this civil war, I don't know if that would have made the movie any more compelling necessarily. But I also don't know if the kind of nihilism that he's trafficking in here, the idea that, well, everyone's just kind of corrupt and bad at the end of the day, I don't know if that's that interesting or novel as a theme. But the novelty here is that the movie is about these journalists that are kind of tracking across the country here. And I mean, I think eventually Civil War is questioning not so much the nature of war, but the nature of objectivity in the ways that we look at war and the ways that we document it. And it's also, I think, a pretty harrowing look at the mindset it requires to run into a war zone, not with a weapon, but with a camera and with a notepad. And I think that this movie, Civil War, I mean, it's undeniable as a thriller. This is a really intense, really brilliantly made movie. There were long stretches of this film where my body was just tense. you mentioned just the sheer visceral nature of the action footage in this movie, but even the scenes of quiet, because it's a very loud movie and then it's a very quiet movie, sometimes, you know, in rapid succession. And the line that you mentioned, the "which kind of American are you" line, is spoken by Jesse Plemons, who is in this movie for, 4.5 minutes and towers over it, man. This is one of those performances that could get like a supporting actor Oscar nomination, even though he's in literally
5 minutes, right?
One scene. I mean, and I think he represents everything that works about this movie. And I think when this movie is sort of a more focused, intense thriller, I do think it works. The rest of it, I'm still kind of in and out on. I go back and forth on it. I'm not
Nathan,
totally sure.
I'm right there with you about Civil War, because there were things that I really liked about this movie. And I would say the performances were solid.
They're
and
all Jesse, spectacular, yeah. I think. I mean, Kirsten Dunst is amazing.
I mean, and to see her in a role and to see her as a mature woman playing this role, because we're used to seeing her in these, not ingenue necessarily, but we now know that she's the mentor to this younger woman who is trying to find her way in the field of photojournalism, especially war journalism and so forth. And I think that basically there are the four main characters and they're on this road trip and they're a really motley crew for sure. And so we have the old grizzled print journalist who's been an inspiration to Lee, the Kirsten Dunst
and
character.
He represents what's left of the New York Times. That's a part
right.
I really
loved. That was pretty interesting. And then we have the guy who we're not really sure if he's American or if he's not. I mean, that's why we worry about him because, you know, it turns out he's actually Brazilian, the actor who plays the character. And then we have Lee and the young woman. And they don't really want to be together at first. And then they start to realize maybe what they have to offer one another. So it's not a buddy road trip movie by any means. But it is a movie about how surviving horror, because they do see a lot of horrific things. Let's be clear with everyone who's listening.
Yeah.
Civil war is violent. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of
graphically violent.
Yes, multiple bodies thrown in, you know, huge pits and, you know, so forth and
it's
so on.
It's nothing that we haven't seen on network news.
But I come down, Nathan, I needed more. I mean, was it supposed to be ironic and funny that Texas and California were aligned together, geographically removed, ideologically removed, at least as far as we know them in 2024? The sort of resignation that Lee, the Kirsten Dunst character, has, you know, it's sort of like, are you in? Are you out? I mean, she's obviously going through some sort of angst. Is she burned out? Has she realized that maybe what she's done has been futile? Because they are coming upon these scenes of horror, much like 20 Days in Mariupol. And they're trying to figure out, am I a fly on the wall observer? Am I embedded with this particular group? Am I supposed to help? So Civil War really never answers any of these questions. And that would have been okay. But I think I was missing, it didn't have to be a lot, just some ideological framing for what was going on. And I think we do as humans like to root for some good guys, and maybe there just weren't any here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's his point. I also, I don't know, I think there's enough in the movie to kind of, like, he is sort of nudging you in one direction over the other, maybe.
Yeah,
I think there is, you know, the people that they encounter that seem to be committing some of the most horrific acts are definitely on a level of extremism that, you know, I think we see in the country. Again, Alex Garland is a British writer-director, and so I think, you know, maybe that's part of it. But, you know, so does he have business telling this particular story? I don't know.
You know, one thing neither of you have talked about is Kaylee Spaney. I mean, she was in Priscilla, and in Priscilla, it was a very understated performance for the most part.
We saw
her grow from a 14-year-old girl into a 24-year-old woman.
Which she did very successfully,
but it was mostly in appearance, not in anything she really did. I did not even recognize her as the same person in this film. I kept going, who is this young woman? Who is this young woman? I had to look it up and I went, my God, she was in Priscilla. I thought what she did was amazing. I think she really has potential.
Well, and I think, you know, there's also the question when talking about Civil War, you know, I've seen this criticism come up and it's that idea of, should you traffic in contemporary real world brutality within the confines of what is essentially, you know, an edge of your seat kind of thriller. I believe you can. I think that movies have been doing that forever, and I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with it. Whether you think Garland succeeds is another point entirely, but I don't think that you can dismiss the craft of this movie and the intensity of the movie. No, and the conversations that will happen afterward, I think, will probably be lively.
He said in interviews that he wanted to make a movie that put people right in there to let them know what war is really
well,
like.
Well, he succeeds at that.
He certainly does. And that was our discussion of Alex Garland's Civil War. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the Italian-born filmmaker Alice Rohrwacher's film La Chimera. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Alex Garland's film Civil War. Let's now change continents and address a film set in a seaside Italian village. Mary Pat and I have a soft spot for anything filmed in Italy, and so we both approached La Chimera, a film written and directed by Italian filmmaker Alice Rohrwacher that is screening at the Magic Lantern Theater, with anticipation. And there's a lot to like, not just the scenery, it was filmed in a number of Italian locations, but also the acting of British actor Josh O'Connor, veteran Isabella Rossellini, and Brazilian actress Carol Duarte as Italia, the servant slash music student slash romantic interest. Rohrwacher's story, though, feels a bit lacking. It involves Arthur, played by O'Connor, as a downbeat archaeologist in the 1980s who's involved with a group of working-class Italians locating and looting Etruscan tombs. Arthur, we discover, has magical powers that allow him to find the tombs, and we meet him just as he's being released from jail. But we get very little backstory about him and why he seems so depressed, though the flashbacks and dream sequences of him longing after a woman named Beniamina give us a clue, as do his scenes with Beniamina's mother, Flora, played by Rossellini. Clues, though, are all that Rohrwacher gives us, along with an uneven tone throughout. Is this a comedy, a crime caper, a tragic romance, and an ending that is as downbeat as anything I've seen in quite some time?
I agree with your assessment, Dan, that maybe this film, La Chimera, is all of those things, and maybe that's okay. Because the thing about La Chimera is it's not told in any sort of linear fashion. It circles back and back again, and so you are left to sort of put together some of the pieces, and some of the information is never revealed, and so we have to fill it in on our own. But I think that this film is set in the 1980s. At first, I was a little bit put off because I couldn't figure out exactly what the time period was. And that was bothersome to me. And then I finally decided, okay, it's sometime in the past. I'm just going to go with it. And we don't find out a lot about how Josh O'Connor's character,
Artur, as they call him.
Artur. We don't know what has prompted him to get into this business. Is he a legitimate archaeologist, at least in part? I mean, we feel that way. We feel as though he's able to identify these artifacts and sort of know their value or know their worth. But then there's the whole divining dousing stick part of his persona, because, I mean, I don't know if I believe in any aspect of that. But I think that's just an example of how this movie sort of flips back and forth between reality and sort of magical thinking, not necessarily magical realism, but magical thinking. His former lover, Beniamina, appears in flashback. She's missing. She's disappeared. Her mom still thinks that she's alive. However, all of her sisters know that that's not the case. And they're very suspicious of Arthur. So they occasionally show up in this film trying to convince mom that, you know, she's being taken advantage of by him and so forth and so on. And then there are the tomb raiders themselves. We can understand who they are and what their motivation is in La Chimera. They want money. And as a matter of fact, they're willing to throw in their lot with whomever is going to produce that income for them. But at the same time, there's this excitement. So it's the blending of the past and the present, the far distant past, you know, in the BC era, what had happened, you know, in this relationship between Artur and Beniamina, and then also what's happening now and what's going to happen in the future with Italia, this new woman who has caught his attention. And I think you characterized it accurately. Is she a singing student of Flora, the Isabella Rossellini? Yeah. Is she a slave? We don't really know what her status is. But there's classism presented in this film. And at the end, when they actually have this art auction, it appears as though people don't really care about where these amazing artifacts came from. And so that's the sort of capitalist market economy thing. So it's got a lot of messaging going on that, you know, you just sort of have to go with it. That's my feeling about the film.
Yeah. And I don't think you can approach La Chimera through the lens of logic or maybe even reason, and certainly not a traditional narrative, although it has all those elements of, you know, a more traditional kind of maybe even genre piece, because you have the guy that gets out of jail and he's revisiting the ghosts from his past, and there's heists and all of this stuff.
And then he goes
stuff.
Back to this place where he lives, like
exactly.
a favela
yes.
on the side of the mountain.
There's double crosses
yep,
and yep. But, ambushes.
But that is not what the movie is
no.
up to. I mean, the title La Chimera, you know, a chimera is sort of this creature that's made out of all these different other creatures.
Almost and certainly, like a shapeshifter
yeah,
in
and
a
certainly
sense.
This
yeah.
But
movie
it's also,
is very much that.
You know, it's also, I couldn't wait to the movie be over to look that up, because the second definition is an illusion or fabrication of the mind, especially an unrealizable dream. So
there you go.
That
yeah,
fits this movie
very
perfectly.
Much. And I think I know I liked this movie more than both of you. I really like Rohrwacher as a filmmaker. I like that she kind of seems to make up her own rules as she goes
yes,
along.
Yes,
she certainly does
true.
That.
There are musical sequences in this. There are dreams and flashbacks. There are changes in visual style. Sometimes the camera flips upside down to sort of represent
yep,
you know, him going
yep,
into his yep. magical brain space. There are moments when the characters will directly address us into the camera. There's moments when it seems like the characters turn into snarling creatures themselves. This movie, just to me, it feels alive and unpredictable, and it's full of all these weird supporting characters, and it goes to all these evocative locations, and it just really gives you the sense that the cosmic and the mundane are coexisting and can maybe even overlap. And even though you never really can put your finger on entirely what this movie's up to me, that is what makes La Chimera such an exciting experience. Sounds like it was more irritating for you, Dan.
It certainly was for me.
I really dug this movie. I just thought it was cool.
I think it's my illness or my sickness or my mania about movies. I always have to try to think, does this make sense? Does this make some sort of sense? Is there a message here? Is the filmmaker trying to tell me something? And, you know, it doesn't always work because, say, take movies like P.T. Anderson's Magnolia or David Lynch's Mulholland Drive. I mean, ultimately, what are those movies saying? I'm not sure, but I went with them. I just went, oh my God, these are so well made. They're so beautiful. And I think that what really disturbed me, and I talked about it in my introduction, what disturbed me most about La Chimera was the difference in tone. It kept going back and forth, and it could never settle on any one thing.
Yeah,
and
that's
that,
the point.
And that bugged me. It just bugged
well,
me.
Well, and I have to give
feature,
a
feature, not a bug.
I have to give a major shout out to Isabella Rossellini, because, you know, we've seen her morph over time from a variety of films. I mean, here she was a model, you know, daughter of one of the most famous actresses in the world and prominent directors. And so now she's my age, and her willingness to sort of be 71 years old, I think, is a tribute to who she is and her sort of confidence in herself, because she plays this woman. She's the matriarch in this film, but we can see so much about who she was. I mean, she's living in this villa that's like crumbling around her,
but it's huge
with these beautiful frescoes and so forth. And so we can see all of these things that have made up her past come together. And she's sort of resigned yet hopeful. I mean, she still believes that her daughter is going to come back, and no one else is in that headspace.
No.
You know, and then we start to think we have a lot of sympathy for her. We understand her. And then she treats Italia horribly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's she really is her little servant girl,
mm-hmm.
unabashedly so.
Yeah. You know, we haven't really talked about O'Connor. we were introduced to O'Connor through the series, the HBO series, The Crown, in which he played during one season. He played the young Prince Charles, and he was amazing. And he's completely different in this film. He was virtually unrecognizable. I looked at him, the opening scene, I think we see him, he's on a train with these young women, and I went, this guy looks familiar, but I can't quite place him.
He's about to be in Challengers, the new Luca Guadagnino movie as well.
Right.
We'll That's right.
I want to go back to, what is this movie La Chimera about? I don't know if I have an exact answer for you there.
I would doubt it if you came up with one.
I do think that Rohrwacher is, I mean, I think she makes fairy tales based on the handful of films of hers that I've seen. Her last feature, maybe her most prominent feature, was, I think it's a 2018 film, it's called Happy as Lazzaro, which is this film about this very pure soul whose kindness and openness is exploited and then weaponized. It just feels like a very almost biblical story in that way. And I think in this movie, in La Chimera, I think that she's looking at the importance of art, the importance of history, and the artifacts of it all, and also like the financial and emotional worth that we put on these things, and ultimately, what are they worth? And there's one scene in this movie that is going to stick with me for a very long time, when they're opening one of the tombs and she cuts inside the tomb before it's unsettled.
Yeah.
And there's something so haunting and beautiful and sad about that. And I think
because the frescoes start to fade right away.
But you just see them before human hands have touched them. And the tragedy that communicates, I think, was very huge for me. So I'm a big fan of this movie.
So without revealing too much, what did you think about the ending?
I thought it was both very
facile.
It felt like the ending of a fable. And I really liked the ending, too.
No, as I said, Nathan will never admit he's wrong. At any rate, that was our discussion of Elise Rohrwacher's La Chimera. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Alex Garland's film Civil War. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best the cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the writer Stephen Crane. It was not well to drive men into final corners. At those moments, they could all develop teeth and claws. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.